Is he on the line? He is? I don't have him on my little machine here yet. I think pound for pound, Paul Rudnick, who writes for The New Yorker, among other things, has written many plays and so forth as well. Funniest man, pound for pound, writing today. He's got a new one in The New Yorker, and it makes you think about the Bible, again, and religious writing, and the fact that the Bible, while it is the Word of God, was interpreted by various writers, different sorts of writers, you know, like the Song of Solomon, you know, was one guy. And, you know, Matthew is another guy. You know, they're different types, is what I'm saying. A lot of different writing in the Bible. Paul Rudnick has approached this now with the news that, in fact, Jesus may have been married. And so there's missing information on that part of in the Bible. It's been excised or never accounted for. And Paul is with us right now in New York. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Your biggest time of the year, Halloween, coming up.
Oh, that's true.
Because you go out trick-or-treating, don't you? Because that's your diet, basically.
Pretty much, no, but I did. Actually, I jumped the gun earlier this morning. I got a set of cupcakes that were frosted with candy corn. Although, I don't know if you've noticed, Oreos has come out with, or Nabisco, has come out with a special Halloween-themed Oreo, which is so disturbing.
What is it?
It's the two chocolate cookies, like in the regular Oreo, and instead of cream filling, there's a little disc of candy corn in between them. It looks like a poker chip.
Oh, man.
And it just is a dental nightmare.
Don't you find, though, because are you a big Oreo eater? I know, because he has almost entirely a sweet and carbohydrate diet, right?
I am, although I stick to the classic Oreo. I've always been a little bothered by the double stuff and when they start dipping it in things.
And the fudge.
Yeah.
The fudge lining and all that stuff.
Yep.
But, you know, you go to the store now, and I look for Oreos, because my daughter likes them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't find regular Oreos. It's all variations on a theme of Oreo.
That is absolutely true, with the mint and the yellow and all
that.
And you do think you have to search.
Yeah. And don't you kind of feel bad for the Hydrox people?
Never.
No? Did you, when you were a kid, did you have Hydrox? And so,
that's like feeling sorry for the Skittles people. You know, I'm sorry, you're wannabes.
Now, this Jesus' wife, that must have struck your fancy when you heard that.
Oh, it did. I couldn't wait. It seemed designed for me. I love any kind of Bible trivia because it always upsets people.
Yeah. What is the backstory on this now? Was it some kind of script or a manuscript was found?
It was a scrap of papyrus, actually, that a professor, a historian of early Christianity at the Harvard Divinity School discovered or at least researched. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very short. It's just a paragraph. But towards the end, Jesus says, and I'm quoting, Jesus said to them, my wife, dot, dot, dot. And then there's nothing. The next page is missing.
Yeah.
So it's very suggestive without being definitive in any way, but it certainly was enough to rile the whole theological community.
It was not take my wife, was it? Because
Well, that's, of course, how I saw it.
Yeah, okay.
I thought it was a setup.
Would you be willing to read us what your thoughts on this entire situation are?
I certainly would.
Well, thank you very much.
I have it here now. Actually, it was set up with that little thing we just discussed, Jesus saying to them, my wife, and here's... And now we hear from her. Fine. Now you know. Jesus was married, and for many years, I happily answered to the name Mrs. Melissa Christ. I met Jesus when we were both teenagers at a Young Hebrews mixer in Bethlehem. I was there with my best friend, Amy of Nazareth, and we were getting ready to leave because we were sick of all those chubby Orthodox boys in rough burlap robes and untrimmed sideburns coming up to us and saying things like, I hope you're not menstruating because I'd really like to touch you. But then, across the room, I saw this beautiful guy with gorgeous flowing hair, wearing a simple white linen tunic and swaying gently to the music with his eyes shut, which was especially impressive because the band consisted of two elderly men rhythmically squeezing a goat. I couldn't help staring, even after Amy told me, I've heard about him. His name is Jesus, and he doesn't have a job. But then Jesus opened his stunning blue eyes and gazed upon me, and I said to Amy, I think I've just discovered one of the lost tribes of Israel. Which one, she asked, and I said, the blondes. Then Jesus came over and introduced himself, and we chit-chatted about everything, from keeping the Sabbath to how we both felt really sorry for the lame. Then I asked Jesus about his family, and he said, my father is a carpenter, and I could feel myself getting all flushed as I immediately thought, hello, new coffee table. After that, Jesus and I started seeing each other, although Jesus' being unemployed did start to bother me. And finally, one night I asked him, so what are your plans? And he replied, well, I'm thinking about inventing Gentiles. Gentiles, I asked, what are those? You know, Jesus answered, Jews who drink. Whenever Jesus would start telling me about this whole new religion business, I would get nervous and ask, but why isn't the Torah enough? And then Jesus would look deep into my eyes and smile and murmur, first draft. Which would make me even more nervous until one afternoon Jesus sat me down on a rough-hewn bench and said, all I'm talking about is everyone loving and respecting each other and sharing the Lord's bounty and bringing peace to the world. And while I was definitely intrigued, a tiny voice inside my head kept repeating, don't lend him money. As the months went by, Jesus began to get more serious about spreading his message of compassion and understanding, and he began to attract hundreds of followers, and all I kept thinking was, where is everyone going to sit? What if we run out of dried figs and almonds? That's when Jesus waved his hand, and I couldn't believe it, but there it was, an all-you-can-eat buffet. And I said to Jesus, this is incredible, but I'm still a Jewish girl. And so he waved his hand again, and there they were, napkins. Of course, like any couple, Jesus and I had our challenges. I didn't like his friends, especially Judas, who kept telling people that he was Jesus's manager, and who kept coming up with ideas like, what if everyone who comes to hear the Sermon on the Mount gets a free, crude, wooden bobblehead of one of the apostles? So they'll have to keep coming back to collect them all. And what if Jesus wore his hair up? By this point, Jesus and I had been dating for 7 years, and my friends kept saying things like, so, when is Jesus going to pop the question? And maybe Jesus would like you better if you were crippled. And I bet Yimmel the Moabite is starting to look pretty good right now, even with the chronic perspiration. At last, I got up my courage, and I told Jesus, you can either become a divine beacon of light for the entire world, or you can marry me and start thinking about moving out of your parents' manger. For a second, Jesus looked dejected, but then he glowed even brighter, and he took my hand and declared, we can have it all. I want you to become my wife, which made me even bolder. And I asked, but what about Mary Magdalene? And Jesus said, that was the old me. We were married in a simple private ceremony in the desert by a rabbi and someone whom Jesus called a Baptist minister. Right before the vows, the rabbi whispered to me, think about what you're doing. Your children will be half Christian. Which was when the minister whispered, so what? College isn't for everyone. But at our reception at a lovely oasis, Jesus won over my family completely when he healed my cousin, Barry of Galilee, who'd been racked with boils his entire life. Although even after Barry was instantly cured, my Aunt Ruth commented, he also has lice. For the next few years, I accompanied Jesus as he traveled from village to village, spreading the word of God to all who would listen. I'd tell myself, let him get it out of his system. Everything came to a head one night at a dinner party at a local inn. All of the apostles had gathered, and I was trying out a new recipe for unleavened cupcakes. These are delicious, Judas said, which made me suspicious because, frankly, have you ever tasted an unleavened cupcake? Then Jesus announced that someone at the party would betray him, and I stood right behind Judas, and I kept pointing and mouthing the words, "It's him, wake up." But Jesus told me privately that he suspected Luke. And when I asked him why, Jesus said, "Because when I told him about my turn the other cheek idea, Luke said, 'But wouldn't it be stronger if you said, turn the other cheek, bitch?'" Then, of course, everything went to pieces and terrible things happened. And when I was finally allowed to visit Jesus in prison, I begged him to abandon his beliefs and to save his own life. But he wouldn't do it because that's not who he was. "I love you so much," I told him, "but I guess you always have to be right about everything." A few days after Jesus passed away, I was sitting in our hut, crying my eyes out, when the door swung open and bingo, there he was. Of course, my first thought was, hold on, maybe he had a twin brother. But then he kissed me and said, "No, it's really me, and I'm dead and I'm back, but only for the day." And I just felt so angry and hurt and confused about everything that had happened that I pounded on his chest and I howled, "Jesus Christ, what were you thinking?" Then after he left for good, I discovered that Mark and Matthew and the rest of them had been jealous of my marriage. So I was erased from the earliest Gospels, which were called Just Jesus, Bachelor Messiah, and Deuteronomy. D-U-D-E. And as for that scrap of papyrus, it was actually one of Jesus' note cards from his early days doing stand-up as an opening act for Little Esther and the Purim Posse and Avram and Roy. The phrase, "Jesus said to them, 'My wife, ... was the setup for a joke, which continued on the next card, "Is so fat," and you can imagine the rest.
Whoa. Paul Rudnick on the Gospel According to Rudnick.
Thank you. It's all true.
And this is endorsed by the Harvard School of Divinity. We should add.
Indeed. And I'm sure quite soon the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Will reach out to me.
It's just a matter of time.
Exactly.
Very insightful, and there's some truths in there, particularly about Barry, I thought.
Oh, Barry of Galilee, yes. He sounds like someone who would have his own line of something on home shopping.
Yes, Barry of Galilee. Thank you, Paul, as always. And what's coming up for you next? We're still waiting the next play, I guess. I know there's something you're working on. You don't like to talk about it, but
well, I have a young adult novel that Scholastic will be publishing in the spring. On the publishing date is May 1st.
Young adult novel.
Yeah, that's my first one.
Yeah, what's this called?
I'm about to settle on the title shortly, so I can't announce it quite yet.
Okay. Sounds good. Paul Rudnick. Thanks, Paul.
Oh, thank you so much.
Great as always. Paul Rudnick from New York and the pages of The New Yorker. My man.